Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in. Time for a daily editorial. Midweek, it's Wednesday. I hope you guys had a great Monday and Tuesday, and then before that, a great weekend. I got a couple of questions for number one, Jimmy, because he can answer them right away, and number two for all you bloggers out there. How the hell do you keep from getting depressed when you read the news today? You know, I have spent a lot of time going over the news from various sites, and I appreciate all the links that you guys are sending me. You know, I watched the link just this morning of the interview, I believe it was on Breitbart, the interview with Bill Gates when he was saying that, of course, some people are going to die when you have the type of situation going on that we have with, with COVID. I read that right after I read that in the Seattle area, Microsoft is going to let go 10,000 employees. I have no idea what kind of economic impact that's going to have on Seattle, because I don't know how much of the of the workforce, 10,000, is in Seattle, but I would guess it's probably pretty large. And I would guess that a lot of the young people who are working for Microsoft, making $400,000 or $500,000 a year, how are they going to handle that? It's going to be pretty, pretty tough. But let's get back to the original question. Jimmy, you go over the stuff you were telling me 5 or 6 hours a day. I'm attempting to duplicate that effort right now. I need some advice from you, Jim. How do you keep from getting depressed?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to avoid. But look, I really try hard to not let it be personal, right? Yeah. There are things I can affect, things that I can talk about, and there's things that I can affect, but I need to understand in order to be able to talk about the things I can affect.
Right.
So, my family's critically important to me, my children, and taking care of them, and that's a diversion for me. If all I was doing was looking at the news all day, which sometimes my wife complains that that's what I'm doing, life would be pretty, pretty frightening right now. But I think ultimately I'm still an optimist about the possibilities of an American future and the Constitution and the basic fundamental principles that we aspire to.
Sure.
So that keeps me from being too depressed.
Yeah. I think I would agree with that, Jim. I think you have to be aware, and you really have to be aware, because I think that we are really on the brink of an interesting situation right now. I realized that worldwide. I realized that when I was going over some of the comments on the blog, and it became very apparent to me that the concept of a one-world government was really becoming a reality. And it's called globalization. I studied a bit on that over the weekend, and I want to say the New American put out an article. It was entitled "Globalization is Here to Stay, and Tech Will Be Its Enabler," say Davos panelists. I think that's really true. I think that globalization is here to stay. Regardless of what anybody tries to do, quote, globalization is here to stay, according to historian Niall Ferguson, speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos this week, calling the notion of deglobalization a mirage. Ferguson assured his globalist audience that all the seemingly disruptive crises of the past few weeks are just history happening. I agree with that. They are just history happening. I think globalization, if you take out the concept of a one-world government, and if you look at globalization in a really what I would call perfect sense, maybe it does make sense, I don't know, but the idea of it evolving into one-world government scares the daylights out of me, and I have taken Jimmy's advice. And I am now reading books by people who I really respect, who are really very anti-globalist. Jimmy, give me some comments on that, would you?
Globalization takes away individual sovereignty for every nation that buys into it. So basically, the voters in the United States, if they give over their economic choices to a globalized system, they no longer have a choice. And that's what we're facing right now. The same with these small countries, you know, with the more power concentrated in a centralized government, the local authorities have fewer opportunities, right? And that's the same problem we're facing in the United States. Our Constitution was designed to protect local, community, state authorities to dictate the future for people, because that's where they were the federal system, the people that are most affected by their local governance have to be able to respond to them and make choices that way. But when you set in place rules that cover the entire nation, it takes away those states' rights. It takes away the local city, community, county, local jurisdiction rights. And when you go to a globalized system, certainly that's going to take away the power of both the successful economies and abuse the more weaker economies. And I think that's what's happening with globalization, certainly with labor. You know, people in these corrupted, small, low-wage countries are increasing industry and maybe a little bit in standard of living, but bottom line is it's a corrupt system. They're being abused. They're actually being slaves, as they've always been, as humans have always been, to big, powerful masters that aren't really following the same rules that allowed more industrialized Western nations to do so well. And that's what the problem is with globalization. That's you take away individual sovereignty, you take away choice.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a subject that I discussed numerous times when the concept of globalization first started. I think the first big American company that really, really focused on globalization was Nike. If you want to read a very interesting book, Phil Knight wrote a book called Shoe Dog. And in that book, he admitted that if it wasn't for labor in the Far East, that Nike would not exist today. I mentioned that to a friend of mine who I was working with at the time, Paul Warren, who was a Mormon guy, really a good friend of mine, really cared about people as a whole, as Jimmy does also. And he said, you know, the problem is, as Jimmy just said right now, taking away the concept of sovereignty, but just putting in the concept of humanity, isn't there some way that globalization could be focused on the people in Taiwan, not necessarily Taiwan, but the people in Vietnam, etc., could make more than just pittance wages? I mean, Phil Knight has made huge amounts of money from Nike, and I have to say, I really like the Nike product. I really like what he has done. But can you imagine what that would turn out, what his name would be in history if he played a role in raising the standard of living, for example, in Vietnam? That would be absolutely fantastic. But that isn't something that seems to be coming out of globalization, does it, Jim?
Talked about this years ago, but those nations that are poorly managed, that are corrupt, that have limited regulation, that allow low labor costs and basically the abuse of the labor force, they also allow very powerful to control the entities because of the level of corruption. So it's inevitable that if you're able to do it, if Phil Knight was able to use those low-wage workers, he can make a lot of money. Theoretically, they would increase their standard of living. But the reality is not so true. And so that's the big push in China right now. How is it fair? And this is the big argument with the green movement. You know, look, the West did really well. So China, we got to exempt them from some of these requirements for green and CO2 because they've got to get their standard of living up. Well, if their standard of living goes up, then that means they're going to be more like the West, they're going to have higher manufacturing costs, and they're going to do whatever they can to do it. So the Chinese will basically do whatever they want environmentally while the West destroys its own industry in order to appease this whole ideology, but then allows China and India to break all the rules and pump all the carbon they want through new carbon plants and these you know, energy, coal-fired energy plants. They're building like one a month. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So they're, as they take more advantage of the system, they're not really helping their people. There has been an increase in standard of living in China, but there's been a tremendous increase in social control of the Chinese people. Now, they were, you know, under the Mao system, it was completely controlled and destroyed. And that's where we're moving to now with social credit scores, with the ability and the technology to track everybody's choices. And they're forced into a mindset. So as we go into globalization, we're allowing some nations to continue on their expansion for the same problems that we're screaming about in the more advanced economies, yet those weaker nations are corrupt and taking away the basic individual freedoms and the freedom of thought and the entrepreneurship that created the West. So it's actually, to me, it's incredibly short-sighted to say that somehow this is going to benefit everybody, when in fact what we're seeing is the abuse of people around the world.
But don't you agree, Jim, that in a perfect world, which does not exist today, that the concept of globalization could help an awful lot of people?
You know what? In Marxist system would work theoretically if everybody believed the same way and did the same thing. It's total BS to think that human nature does not directly impact all of these choices, and that the corrupt, the rich, and the wealthy will influence outcomes more so than the average person, average human being. So it's, yes, a bunch of elitists are sitting in Davos right now, Switzerland, planning the future of the world because they got the money and the power to do it and the influence.
Right.
How many people are they willing to sacrifice in order to achieve their vision and goals? Very similar to how many people were the former Soviet Union and the Russians and the Marxists willing to sacrifice in order to ensure their goals? This is what happens when they get power. Yeah. Millions of people end up dying because it's more important to go to the ideology than it is to the actual outcomes. And those outcomes are never successful.
Right.
So this is the problem.
But what if they could?
It's irrelevant. It's not possible, Al. So I mean, it's not a valid question to say, is this possible, or what if it would happen? Because in fact, there's no way you're going to take away police in San Francisco or Seattle, and people are going to treat each other fairly. The powerful will take the power from others. Yeah. Or the criminal will. And that's the reality of the human nature. So this argument of ideology of what if everybody was really nice and treated each other well is irrelevant in my view. There's no point in it. And that's what the mistake is with so many people that argue, even conservatives, that argue that, one world government would probably solve this. Globalization will solve this problem and make it a better world.
Yeah.
No, it's not going to make it a better world. It's going to actually destroy the benefits of the system that we've had with free speech, free ideas, entrepreneurial spirit, and capital investment.
And what I'm hearing you say is there are a number of factors that make it impossible. Number one is the concept, the emotion of selfishness. And that comes right out of something that God said, I'm going to give all of my people free will. Free will, actually, I think, is one of the main reasons that the concept of everybody working together to make the world a better place for other people is simply not going to work, because there's no equality. All men are not created equal, unfortunately.
We may be created equal, but we evolve differently.
I don't think we are created equal because of what you just said.
I think that anger overcomes people. I think jealousy overcomes people. Pride overcomes people. Yeah. The seven deadly sins.
Right.
And those sins make it impossible. You cannot train everybody to be a certain way as hard as you wish you could. And so it's basically
isn't that a shame, Jim? Isn't that a damn shame?
No, I know it's not. And the reason why I don't think it's a shame, because I don't want to be – I like individualism. I like the opportunity that I have to think and believe as I wish.
You bet.
If I'm forced to believe a certain way or to speak a certain way, then all of a sudden we actually hurt the human experience.
Yeah.
Now, Think about how much humanity has advanced since the inception of the U.S. Constitution and those ideas behind that,
yeah.
which is actually freedom, where the individual is equal to or greater than the government, where our government is here to protect our rights, not issue our rights. Those specific outlines in our Constitution, in our philosophy, have made the world a much safer, better place in spite of all the damaging that we've seen. Most of the damage and the violence that we've seen are coming from people that want to take away those individual choices and freedom.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I would agree with that. We're going to have some very, very interesting discussions on globalization as I get more educated on this concept. Theoretically, I think it could be a good concept, but theoretical never works. And that's in effect what you're saying. Jim, you wanted to talk a little bit about what's going on with the documents associated with Biden. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think we talked a little bit about it yesterday. I truly believe that the White House lawyers were looking for other things to cover up and protect the Biden family from. Once the lawyers get a hold of documents, then they're privileged documents. That
right.
keeps law enforcement from looking at them. When they found these classified documents, according to the latest reporting from Wall Street Journal, the DOJ decided against being involved in searching for more documents. Now, how telling is that? They were willing to jump on board with basically a legal civil argument between the Trump administration and the Trump files and the National Archives, and then actually raid the House in order to grab and to take this information. But they're going to completely avoid getting involved in this search for documents that turn up in four different places in the Biden House, that in Biden offices, that when Biden had no legal authority to take them, no any legal authority to declassify them. This is a cover up. This is the DOJ covering up to protect Biden. The Wall Street Journal article actually indicates, from the writer's perspective, this may give the DOJ an opportunity to put more pressure as the investigation goes forward with Robert Hur, the prosecutor from Chicago, from Illinois, that Trump appointed, but was appointed on the approval of two states, two Democratic senators from Illinois, and that was a partner to Rod Rosenstein, or an assistant to Rod Rosenstein, who was basically attempting to spy on the Trump campaign and started the whole Mueller craziness. Yeah. So, this to me is a political whitewash, an investigative whitewash, and the DOJ is deciding to let Biden's lawyers review and look at these documents. Certainly does not, you cannot discount the fact that they may be protecting other unclassified documents or information that may show activities that were certainly questionable, if not directly illegal, in relationship with foreign governments and the Chinese government and Hunter Biden.
Yeah. Jimmy, I'm kind of feeling that I pushed that subject down your throat, and I don't mean to do that. So let me ask you, what else did you want to talk about this Wednesday?
Oh, I don't know. There's all kinds of interesting stuff out there.
Yeah, there is.
this whole DOJ situation with the classified documents is going to drag on Biden, but really the press is unwilling to investigate. They're screaming and yelling at him to answer questions, but they're not going to push anything.
Yeah.
The DOJ is not going to push anything. The Republicans are going to do their best, but the bottom line is it's very hard to trust anything right now in Washington and the decisions that are being made and the policies that are pushing forward.
Yeah. Anytime.
Yeah, so the economy, border issues, energy policy, of course, the global security policy with the Ukraine conflict, all of that is weighing heavily on the American spirit, but it's also really lack of leadership from the executive branch and a failure by our Senate and our House until hopefully just now. With this new house to actually do the right thing for the American future.
What are the odds of that happening, Jimmy, in your opinion?
So I think it's going to be a long, I'm optimistic that things will, you know, again, with transparency, things will change. If we keep, you know, silencing, and if the law enforcement fails to do its job and actually works for a particular political party, and if the Washington establishment continues to work for particular globalized influences and lobbyists without transparency, that we're going to be in a problem. But if we've got transparency and we put pressure on some of these media outlets to actually do their job, then there's hope that people will wake up to the challenges we're facing and the incompetence that is leading us down the road to disaster.
I think that's going to probably happen before the next election, Jim. Anything else you want to say? We're out of time.
The only other thing, I think there's a great piece. You know, Michael Schellenberger was one of the reporters that Elon Musk passed information to for the Twitter files.
Yeah.
And what it showed was the level of corruption inside. He's specifically talking about via his Twitter account, the weaponization of the FBI in order to protect the Biden family, when in fact they had information. They knew that the Hunter Biden laptop is real, that there's nothing that's come of that. And we're talking millions of dollars that the Hunter Biden and the Biden family has received from foreign governments. That was unknown to the public when the election took place in 2020 because of the FBI's incompetence. But it's not incompetence, it's actually facilitating a cover-up. And that's a real problem for the United States when Department of Justice and the FBI
really
do that.
Really interesting statement on your part, Jim. I can't comment on it really because I'm not quite as familiar as you are. But boy, that makes it pretty tough for America. Thanks, Jim.
You bet.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.